Good morning and welcome. It's Paul Molloy and Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. Thanks for being with us this very, golly, cold, rainy morning in Tampa Bay, overcast. Boy, we could complain, but then I'm looking up north and I'm not going to complain whatsoever. Anyway, I am Paul Molloy. It's Thursday, January 30th. Thank you for being with us. We're going to be talking in a few minutes with Hans Bader. Hans Bader is a senior attorney at the Competitive Enterprise Institute in Washington, D.C., a libertarian think tank. And we're going to be talking with him on President Obama's State of the Union speech on Tuesday and his references to hiking the minimum wage for contractors working for the government. We're going to talk a little bit about Obama's recess appointments. Are they constitutional? And we're going to touch on Obamacare. So please stick around for that one. Also, later in the show, you're going to hear from a guy whose business is to provide people that want them with crowds, whether they be adoring fans or demonstrators, whatever, or for just a cause of any kind. This guy will provide you with the people. For instance, Lee, I know that when you get off of a train or a plane and you've got all of those people around cheering you because you're a celebrity, you don't need this guy. But people like myself, struggling, you know, I want to get off, I want to get out of a cab and have, you know, 25 or 30 people with their autograph books. So this is the kind of thing that this guy does. And so we're going to talk with him.
All? I usually have the authorities waiting for me.
You do have the
disembark from.
Did you see speaking about disembarking and having the authorities wait for you? Did you see Justin Bieber? First of all, you could hardly see him because there must have been, you know, that is the tightest squeeze of any group I've ever seen. The poor guy, and they were trying to get him into the police, I guess. Wow. Poor old Justin, and he's only what? He's only 16 or 17 years old?
Is it, he's having a, you know, it's not a midlife crisis.
I'm hoping he lives to midlife.
Teenage meltdown.
I hope he lives to midlife to experience a midlife crisis. I'm worried about it. Anyway, enough about Justin Bieber. Everybody else is talking about him. We shall not. But we're going to awkwardly continue our Freedom Works Ultimate Top 10 list at the very end of the show. And today, the top 10 most dangerous airports in the world. The most dangerous airports in the world. Wait till you hear why they're dangerous. One is right at the edge of a cliff. So if you don't put the brakes on soon enough, guess what happens? So that's the kind of wonderful architectural and engineering thinking that goes into some of these top 10 most dangerous airports. Anyway, Freedom Works, we come to you 3 days a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m., to 12 noon Eastern Time here on Tantalk Radio. We are here to bring you the libertarian perspective, the idea that the more freedom you have, the better off you're going to be. And with that freedom, of course, comes personal responsibility. My rights end where your little nose begins. That's what life is really all about. But you know what? That makes sense. Now, a libertarian generally believes in government having a part in our lives, especially maintaining public order, you know, police, courts, got to have those. But after that, it's a pretty good case could be made for the free market doing just about everything else better. Anyway, thanks for being with us. And we would love to have you call in if you have that inclination. Here is our toll-free number, 866-826-1340. 866-826-1340. If you live locally in Tampa Bay and choose to do so, our phone number is 727-441-3000. And you can also access our brand new Freedom Works website and find out more about the show, whether you're a libertarian or a liberal or a conservative. We have a very short quiz you can take right there to find out. The website, thefreedomworks.com, thefreedomworks.com. Well, there is so much going on. I can't wait to talk to Hans Bader about the president's State of the Union speech. I find State of the Union speeches to be like a Chinese meal. Half an hour later, you don't remember what you did in the restaurant. Nothing stays with you. And it's kind of like the State of the Union speech. I mean, I don't think you're going to hear hardly a peep about it after this weekend is over with. It's all Chinese meal. That's all it is. Anyway, the House yesterday has approved a $100 billion a year farm bill. It will make very small reductions in food stamps, but it will continue the generous subsidies for farmers. Why am I not surprised? Here's the vote, 251 to 166. It's a five-year bill. It's now going on to the Senate. Remember that the Senate and the House both have to vote. Then they come to a conference committee between the two to set up what they're sending on to the president. Now, it's a 1,000-page bill. Do you think that most or any of these people that voted in the House for this bill read it? I doubt it very seriously. All they read was the pork that they wanted in the bill just to make sure it was in there. Now, Agriculture Committee Chairman Frank Lucas, he's a Republican, and Senate Agriculture Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow, she is a Democrat, have spent the past 2 years working on this bill. Obviously, they're trying to appeal to the farmers. They're also trying to appeal to those that want a certain amount of welfare because the Agriculture Committee, believe it or not, oversees the welfare money. Senate House conservatives apparently not so happy with this bill. They wanted to dial back some of that food stamp spending, but apparently not to be that much. They wanted to cut back $4 billion a year, but the new bill only cut, that's with a B, by the way, billion, and the new bill only cuts $800 million. So there you go. And, you know, subsidies to farmers have been going on, I don't know, for since at least the 30s. Sugar and tobacco and all of these different groups that, you know, from time to time would be benefactors of it. The whole concept is to pay farmers to grow crops at certain times and not to grow them at certain times. Now, does that make any sense? In fact, we were paying farmers, and we continue to pay farmers, not to grow certain kinds of sugar crops. So what happens? We have a higher, we try to keep sugar imports from coming into the country, particularly from Brazil and other places. So what happens? Everything that has sugar in it is more expensive. Why don't we let the free market work that whole situation out? Also, apparently labor unions, leaders of some major labor unions, are pushing back against Obamacare. Some of the proposed changes in there that could affect some of their health plans, their union-sponsored health plans. Now, in a letter to Harry Reid, he's the Senate Majority Leader, and also to Nancy Pelosi, who is the House Minority Leader, the presidents of Labor's International Union of North America and the president of Unite Here say they're bitterly disappointed with the proposed rules for Obamacare. Quote, if the administration honestly thinks that these proposed rules are responsive to our concerns, they're not listening or they don't care. It goes on to say it would be a sad irony if the signature legislative accomplishment of an administration committed to reducing income inequality will cut living standards for middle-income and low-wage workers. So there you go. Even the unions don't like it. And if you've seen some of the union plans prior to the onset of Obamacare, you can understand why. They're much, much more generous. The union people are going to get a worse deal with this government-regulated Obamacare. Anyway, we're going to take a short break, and I cannot wait to talk with Hans Bader. We will dissect the State of the Union speech, among other things, so don't go away.
Imus in the Morning.
Please welcome now to the Imus in the Morning program. One of the remaining Beatles, Ringo Starr, with some thoughts about something. Good morning, Ringo.
Good morning, Imus. You know, all these loser Beatle fans are talking about there being a reunion, but that's not going to happen for a very good reason. Two of us are dead. And yet, strangely enough, that didn't seem to stop the Beach Boys' 50th anniversary tour. They dragged poor old Brian out the sandbox, propped him up at the keyboards like it's Weekend at Bernie's 2. God only knows. Yeah, well, thank goodness somebody does, because Brian certainly doesn't. It's bloody embarrassing. 70-year-old still singing about surfing. It's a little tough to hang 10 off your little rascal's scooter, you old fart. You'll have fun till the EMT takes your walker away. Pet sounds? Those are just the noises Al Jardine makes now when he eats. You know, Jethro Tull had it half right. They're too old to rock and roll, just not too young to die.
Catch Imus in the Morning right here on the stations of the Tantalk Network.
Ask them to drain every ounce, and they will. Ask them to lie down in front of a puck traveling at 98 miles per hour, and they will. Ask them to fight for each other like their brothers, and they will. And the only thing they ask for in return is a thank you. 20,000 of them, to be exact. The Tampa Bay Lightning beat the Thunder.
Coke Zero Zone seats are back. See the Lightning for just $10 and get a 12-ounce Coke Zero with your purchase at Ticketmaster.com.
Now it's time for my favorite show. It's my favorite show. It really is. You love that?
I love that.
What, do you want to be the Walmart of opioid distribution? Do you know any politicians that are going to kind of turn a blind eye? Do you know any politicians we can pay off, like that guy up in Michigan recently? There's no quality control with the heroin.
Correct.
You have quality control with the oxycodone.
The Prescription Addiction Radio Show, brought to you by Novus Medical Detox and Suncoast Rehabilitation. Tuesday nights at 5 on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Before the dawn of Western civilization, a divine culture blossomed in the East. Enter a world of Chinese dynasties, deities, and legends with the flips and spins of classical Chinese dance, a live orchestra, dazzling costumes, and majestic animated backdrops. Shen Yun takes you to another world. Experience Shen Yun. Coming to Mojave Theater, St. Petersburg, February 5th through 8th. For tickets, visit shenyun.com.
You're listening to the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works. I am Paul Malloy. Thank you so much for being with us. We come to you Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 12 noon. And we're delighted to have Hans Bader, the senior attorney and counsel for special projects at the Great Competitive Enterprise Institute, joining us. We're going to talk very briefly, much more briefly than President Obama did, on the State of Affairs, the State of the Union speech, which Obama presented on Tuesday. Hans, welcome again to Freedom Works.
Thank you.
Great to have you with us again. Did you have the wherewithal to sit through the entire Obama speech Tuesday night?
No, I read the text of it afterwards.
You were a very intelligent man, so you didn't have to sit through as it was droned on. But let's talk a little bit about it. He gave only passing mention to big-ticket legislative goals, apparently. He's vowing to use his executive powers to step through some modest things, perhaps, this coming year on the economy and education. What did you take from it, and is he changing his philosophy at all from, say, his first State of the Union speech?
Well, I mean, there's no longer any pretense of trying to, you know, get the budget in balance. There's no talk of, you know, cutting any waste, really. So basically, the pretense of fiscal responsibility is gone. And I guess partly that's because the economy is slowly coming out of the recession, so the budget deficit is going down, no thanks to Obama, although it's still much higher than it has been historically. For, you know, vastly higher than it's been for most of the last 30 years. In terms of big ticket items, he didn't really discuss a lot. Some of the things he did sounded sort of like unilateral and, you know, ignoring Congress's prerogatives, although on closer inspection they were not as alarming as you might think. For example, he indicated he was going to unilaterally raise the minimum wage on federal contracts, And that likely violates the Service Contract Act of 1965 as to a small minority of such workers. But really, his order won't affect that many government contract workers anyway. So it's not a huge deal. You know, in this administration, violating a statute is just, you know, they've done it so often that it's not even news. It's like a dog bites man story.
In fact, yes, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Yes, I understand what you're saying. In fact, that was one of the things I was going to ask you about in line with these recess appointments. It seems to me that of all the things that Obama is doing, the most troubling thing is forgetting what his job is, which is to execute the laws, not to legislate. And it seems like the recess appointments and some of the other things he does or does not do with legislation completely violates his reason for being there.
Right. I mean, the recess appointments that was made during, you know, under the Obama's reasoning, every time the Senate goes home for lunch, he can appoint new federal officials
yes.
using recess appointments because he can declare what a recess is. It doesn't have to be any particular length. It doesn't have to be what the founding fathers thought a recess was, which was the recess, the period between sessions of Congress. It's just basically any time that he thinks they're not really there to conduct government business, even if they say it's a pro forma session. And what's really amazing about his appointing these people to the NLRB and the CFPB without congressional consent, I mean, on the one hand, he claims that it was not a real recess. On the other hand, there was that huge, you know, tax and spending measures dealing with the fiscal cliff that went through during that very period. So he's having his cake and eating it, too. He's insisting they were not in recess when Congress gave him what he wanted, approved massive fiscal measures during that so-called recess. And yet he's insisting, on the other hand, that there was a recess where they were not doing anything when he wants to appoint people to powerful federal positions without any consent of the Senate.
Now, the Supreme Court is looking at this whole thing. From what I'm reading, it sounds like they are definitely not going to allow him to get away with this, if you want to use that term. Your thought on that?
Well, I think they're going to agree that what he's done goes too far, but they're not going to agree on themselves about how far it goes. The lower courts interpreted the language of the recess appointments clause as only allowing appointments between congressional sessions. And that's actually a fair reading of the language of that clause of the Constitution. But often the courts don't adopt the most natural reading of something when it would create a can of worms for government officials. And if you adopt that reading, it results in a whole bunch of other government appointments being invalid. So they may rely on a narrower rationale that doesn't fully breathe life into the limits on recess appointments that you would expect from reading the Constitution, but instead just says that you can't go as radically far as President Obama did. They may say, thus far but no farther, we're going to let you pretend that certain breaks during a congressional session are the recess for purposes of the recess appointments clause, but we're not going to let you treat every time they go out for lunch, every incredibly tiny small break, as being a recess, because that would basically gut the Senate's power to advise and consent to President Obama's nomination.
We're talking with Hans Bader. He is the senior attorney and counsel for special projects at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We're talking a little bit about President Obama's State of the Union speech. You know, I said this off mic earlier that the speech is sort of like Chinese dinner. You know, a half an hour later, you've forgotten about it, and all of the promises and, you know, and great statements and all of the other things. It's just, and then you've got the other party, which comes on right after that, and they get, what, about 20 minutes to talk a little bit. I mean, the venue is so much different, but these are just sort of ways to, I guess, and get some free airtime. I mean, it's really kind of disintegrated from what they were originally intended to be. Is that how you feel, Hans?
Yeah, I mean, in this day and age, it just seems like even when something is illegal, if it goes on long enough, it becomes an accepted practice and no one wants to disturb it.
Yeah, it's very scary, and you're exactly right. I want to touch also, maybe more so time-wise than Obama did in his State of the Union, on the healthcare situation with you. Obviously, the you know, almost every poll you look at, most people are just not happy with this thing for one reason or for another. Obama didn't talk a lot about this thing, about what's been going on with it. He gave very short shrift to it. May I ask you, do you think that that this is going to be a real albatross around his neck and also around Democrats as we move towards November with, of course, all of the House and one-third of the Senate up again?
Yeah, I mean, it's a political liability, but it's not like even a somewhat more Republican Congress come next year is going to be able to do that much about it because, you know, he still has the veto power. And who knows, maybe they won't abolish the filibuster for ordinary legislation the way they've abolished it for, you know, federal appeals court nominations.
Right.
So, you know, the Democrats will still have a lot of clout in the Senate, and the Republicans will probably manage to nominate enough people who are unelectable in primaries that the GOP will not retake the Senate.
Really?
That's unclear. It's possible they'll retake it. Yeah, I mean, people have an enormous amount of wishful thinking. Like, they really seriously thought Christine O'Donnell could win that Senate seat in Delaware when Obama won Delaware by a 5-3 margin. And you had people like Mark Levin saying, oh, yes, I was there in 1980. A hardcore conservative can win Delaware. Well, you haven't been there since 1980. In 1980, Reagan won Delaware. And in 2008, Obama won by a 5-3 margin. That's a pretty dead giveaway. You have to nominate a moderate, even someone who's at best half a loaf, like Bill Castle, you know. I'm sorry, not Bill Castle, Representative Castle. But, you know, the Senate is not going to be heavily Republican in the next session. It's going to have fewer Democrats. The Republicans may even retake control of the Senate. But they're not going to be able to fundamentally change Obamacare by passing things over his veto. The ability to defund the law may, you know, give them some leverage to extract some reforms of the law to make it a bit less horrible. But, you know, at the end of the day, Obama seems willing to act like an emperor and basically rewrite the health care law as he goes along by, you know, changing this provision and that provision and doing all kinds of things to the law that no one thought was legitimate. And he may just keep on doing that. He may basically thumb his nose at Congress and, you know, essentially keep on legislating by executive fiat and keep on making alterations to the health care law and granting waivers to supporters who might be injured by this or that provision. And, you know, in terms of what Congress can do, they do have the power of the purse if the Republicans retake control of the Senate. That will enable them to extract some reforms. But fundamentally, a lot of that law will continue to be there and continue to haunt us unless you get not only a Republican Congress, but also a Republican president.
Right. In other words, we're going to have to wait until 2016 to get rid of Obamacare, is what you're trying to say. It makes good
sense. Right. I mean, right now, they've only managed to tweak a few provisions, like the Class Act they got rid of, that burdensome reporting provision they got rid of. They managed to do that even with a Democratic Senate. And if you get a Republican Senate, you'll be able to make some more reforms to make Obamacare somewhat less horrible. But, you know, the broad outlines of the law are what they are, and they're not going to change until, you know, unless you get a Republican president. So you can make the law less horrible under a Republican Congress with a Republican takeover of the Senate, but you fundamentally, the fundamental actuarial and economic and other problems of Obamacare will persist unless you have both a Republican Congress and a Republican president.
You know, it's so interesting, this whole concept of how best to deal with it. And coming from a libertarian perspective, of course, we don't want the federal government involved whatsoever in healthcare, but it's like a moving train wreck. It's continuing to slide down the tracks, but it's wrecked and possibly.
And the GOP is too cowardly. The GOP is too cowardly to take aim at some provisions of the law that sound good, that are, but just mess up the insurance market. So, you know, they came out recently with a proposal that would, you know, would result in a lot less adverse selection and moral hazard and things like that, but it still left much of the law intact. If you saw the recent conservative proposals, it left much of the regulatory regime intact. So the Republicans they have ideas for making it significantly less bad, but in terms of creating an optimal healthcare system, it's not there. You know, you're basically picking, it's the lesser of the evils. It's not, you know, a really rational healthcare system.
Well, a lot of Republicans just don't agree on exactly what to replace it with. I mean, most of them are afraid to say, we don't need the government getting involved to replace it with anything. We need to remand it back to the private sector. And, you know, I mean, that's the real answer is that if you get it back in the private sector and if each state has medical medical regulations, each state is the so-called laboratory for that particular state. It's once it gets into the clutches of the federal government that, things really have gone bad. Now, we learn the hard way. We learn the hard way by going through this. But maybe in the long run, it's going to teach us a very costly lesson on why the federal government should not be involved in a private enterprise or industry.
Right. And the state regulation is already pretty messed up. I mean, some states have horrifically, dysfunctional health insurance markets because of the pie-in-the-sky economics behind their regulations, which impose all these obligations, and then they wonder why the costs spiral up and you have adverse selection and you have hazard and other problems.
Yeah, but the thing is that that's okay because they can look to the other states that are succeeding and change. It's much easier to adapt for a state, and they can change and they can follow those states that are doing the best job, providing the best health care, providing the most efficient coverage. And why in God's name people don't get into this thing of talking more about allowing, unlatching the federal government from health care, and then, of course, unlatching the federal government from education and allowing the states to get back into, the laboratories that they can be. And then other states aren't stupid. They're going to look and look for the best results, and they're going to, they will mimic them, and that's how we get things better. By the way, I wanted to tell you, Hans, if you didn't know it already, that Henry Waxman has announced he's retiring at the end of the year.
Well, I suspect a lot of people will rejoice about that. He certainly persecuted a lot of perfectly good people, and he had never showed any interest in economics. And he once claimed the whole reason the economy grew is because the government got bigger and that we essentially taxed ourselves into prosperity.
Yes. So,
he'll be replaced by a relatively like-minded spirit.
I would think so.
But he may not be quite as bad. On the other hand, you look at other people, and it's sort of like you're replacing one evil with another. Like my Congressman Jim Moran is resigning, and at least we won't have someone who embarrasses us with his domestic altercations and domestic violence allegations the way he did.
Yeah.
But the person who replaces him in my district right near Washington, D.C., will be even further to his left and even more statist in terms of their understanding of economics, because that guy was such an embarrassment laughingstock in terms of his personal life, but at least he voted for certain things like free trade treaties that were pro-free market. And his replacement won't even do that. His replacement will be one of the most statist members of the entire Congress, judging by the current pool of candidates.
My goodness. We're talking with Hans Bader. He is the senior attorney for special projects at the wonderful Competitive Enterprise Institute there in Washington, D.C. And also, just so our listeners do know, Henry Waxman is a Democrat from California who has been there for 20 terms, Hans, 20 terms. I remember him. I used to work for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce back in the, back in the 80s. And Henry Waxman, we got so much money from businesses by mentioning people like Ted Kennedy, Jesse Jackson, and Henry Waxman all the time when we were, talking about things we were trying to do. It was a great source of revenue for us.
Maybe it's not so great for Heavenly because he says certain things that the Democrats would be smarter not to publicly say, because he has so much power and his position was so secure, he would say things that were maybe a gift for a fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
Because, a Democratic pollster might tell a more vulnerable Democratic incumbent, yes, you may really think that, but don't say it because the public will view that as, extreme. Whereas Henry Waxman would go ahead and say it since he had a very safe seat.
Well, I guarantee that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Henry Waxman was a pinup boy for, at least when I was there, for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Hans, I want to thank you so much. I know you're a very busy guy. We really appreciate your coming back and talking with us a little bit about what is going on and Obama's State of the Union message. And if people want to find out a little bit more about what you're doing, Competitive Enterprise Institute, go to your website?
Yeah, you can go to CEI.org, and we also have a blog called openmarket.org, which basically summarizes our responses to what happens during the week.
CEI.org and openmarket.org. Hans Bader, thank you so very, very much.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. All right, we're going to take a short break. When we come back a little bit later, do you need a crowd of adoring fans? We got somebody that can provide it for you, so don't go away.
NBC News Radio, I'm Jim Klishevsky. President Obama taking his call for a higher minimum wage to Wisconsin and Tennessee today.
Nobody who works full-time should ever have to raise a family in poverty. And that is why I firmly believe it's time to give America a raise.
The president signing an executive order creating new retirement savings accounts. Atlanta still icebound after Tuesday's freak snowstorm paralyzed highways. NBC's Tom Costello.
We still have a civil emergency in place here, which means they really want people to stay off the roads at least until noon. But I'll tell you, it is still treacherous on the roads here in Atlanta this morning.
Trouble in the air, too. More than 6,000 flights have been canceled since Monday as airlines scramble to accommodate stranded passengers. And a new study shows the early years of a kid's life are critical time for maintaining a healthy weight. Kids overweight in kindergarten are four times more likely to be obese by eighth grade compared with their slimmer peers. This is NBC News Radio. The bad news keeps piling up for teen sensation Justin Bieber, running afoul of the law now in Toronto. NBC's Katie Tour says he's facing assault charges.
According to police, while chauffeuring Bieber and several others, a limo driver claimed he was repeatedly hit in the back of the head by one of the passengers. It's unclear if the alleged attacker was Bieber or a member of his entourage.
California officials say the drought is so bad nearly 20 communities could run out of water in 2 to 4 months. In Cloverdale, mandatory rationing is underway. Water prices have been hiked 50% so the city can dig new wells. Solid growth expected when the government releases fourth quarter GDP estimates this morning. Analysts expecting a growth rate of 3.3%. And it's the end of an era for Volkswagen. The last VW camper, the customized version of the Volkswagen bus, has been built and sold for a reported $58,000. So if you crave a taste of the 60s, you'll have to settle for secondhand. I'm Jim Klishevsky, NBC News Radio.
Good Thursday morning. This is Pryor Smith speaking from Toronto. Here are the news headlines for vacationing Canadians. Federal Liberal leader Justin Trudeau shakes up the Senate and Parliament Hill in the process. And Veterans Affairs Minister Julian Fantino finds out the hard way you don't mess with Canadian vets. All of those stories and more, please join me for Canada Calling. For 60 years, a daily update of Canadian news.
You're listening to the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Hey, how do you like that? I kind of like that. That's kind of exciting, that music. I don't know if it's battle music or... I don't know what it is. I like it. Gets your blood going. Thank you very much, Lee Clark, for doing that music. Well, before we bring on Adam Swart, who heads an organization called Crowds on Demand, we want to talk a little bit about some of our favorite organizations that directly affects you. One of them is the IRS. And, of course, we have, what, how many, 80,000 IRS people? I'm probably vastly underestimating how many people work for the IRS. It probably is actually hundreds of thousands of people. They have hundreds of thousands of people. However, apparently when you call their office, you can't talk to any of them. Have a question on your returns? Do not ask the IRS because an annual watchdog report to Congress shows the agency falls far short when it comes to answering questions that people might have about their income tax forms. The National Taxpayer Advocate found only 61% of people that want to speak with a customer service rep at the IRS got through last year. 61% got through. That left nearly 20 million calls unanswered. Now, even those that got through, do you know how long they typically wait? I have had to call the IRS. You do not want to do that.
By the way, the people that get on with me are the nicest people. So believe me, it ain't the people. But it is the system. The report largely blamed budget cuts and lamented the impact that the poor customer service is having on the taxpayers. And here's what they said. At the risk of vast understatement, it's a sad state of affairs when the government writes tax laws as complex as ours and then is unable to answer your question based on basic questions from baffled citizens who are doing their best to comply. So I guess even when they get the IRS customer service rep on the phone, they don't necessarily get the correct answer. So maybe it would depend on which IRS agent that you get, which is not a surprise because all you have to do, if you go online, you can look at the booklet. You don't even have to pick it up at the library anymore, and you can see how thick, T-H-I-C-K, thick that booklet is with all those different rules and regulations. It's even if you just have a basic salary, I mean, you still have a problem filling out that form. And so questions are always going to be asked. But when you can't even get through on the phone, my goodness, it's becoming like Obamacare. What is this country going to? Also, if you live in Hollywood, don't tell anybody that you're a conservative or even a libertarian, because there's a good chance you won't get much work. Conservative groups in Hollywood are shrouded in secrecy for fear of a backlash from movie industry liberals. And there's one group that's being investigated by the IRS after applying for a tax-exempt status. The organization is called Friends of Abe, as in Abe Lincoln. They have attempted to stay under the radar because they don't want the publicity for people that are part of their organization, because they want to eat. They want to get money. They want to have a career. So they try to stay under the radar. They have about 1,500 members, the Friends of Abe does. But now the group has come under the scrutiny of the IRS after applying for their tax-exempt status. And you know what the IRS has been doing to conservative groups that have been applying for a tax-exempt status. They have been hounding them, harassing them, delaying them, and pretty much treating them like the bastard child in the family. So that's what apparently is happening. Now, this report says that the IRS has been investigating Friends of Abe for 2 years and has had access to its security-protected website containing all of the names of the members. Now, that's a scary scenario. This organization was apparently launched a decade ago, and it's tried to keep a veil of silence surrounding its members, even banning cameras at their events because they don't want to be, you know, publicized. Because you can. I've got a friend, a conservative friend, that we've had on the air. His name is David Angston, that works in Hollywood. And I'll tell you what, I've always said he's had a lot of courage to work in Hollywood and be a conservative towards a libertarian. Because unless you're a big star already, and there are a handful of them that are, you better not tell people that you are conservative. Just to give you another example, there is an actress in San Francisco that has lost her job because she endorsed a Tea Party candidate. Maria Conchita Alonso. Do you remember Maria Conchita Alonso Lee? Did we talk about this?
How could I forget? Yeah, we did.
Oh.
I actually
why did you allow
up,
me
so
to...
She's fresh in my memory.
Why did you allow me to bring this story
You're not
up
revisiting
again?
The story?
I'm revisiting the story because I forgot about it.
Oh.
But anyway, the poor... It does go in line with this Friends of...
I get
of
confused
Abe.
With... Who is that other Chaka or some? Not Chaka Khan, but you know the lady Charo.
Oh, Charo! My
Charo.
Goodness, Charo!
You know, with the guitar and the large
Charo. Are you talking about Charo?
The large castanets.
Yeah, Charo has been around since. My goodness, she goes back to the '60s. So she was with that
19th century, I think. Right?
She does. She was with Spanish band leader. Now I can't think of his name. But she was, I'll think of his name, but she started out with that Spanish, famous Spanish band leader that went back to the 30s.
Jesse Arnett, no, he's Cuban.
No, this was, and I'll think of his name. But Charo, yeah, my goodness, Charo. I think Charo's a little older than Maria Conchita Alonso. In fact, Charo could possibly be her mother. But
that explains a lot.
Maria is endorsed a Tea Party candidate, and like you said, we did talk about it. But there you go. You can't do things like that without without jeopardizing your career. Very, very scary. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, do you want to have a crowd that will greet you as you alight from a plane, train, or cab? Or perhaps you want to have demonstrators because you have a certain political point of view. We're going to talk to a guy that will provide you with people. Don't go away.
Direct from his sold-out tour, back by popular demand, he's back. Barry Manilow. With over 50 top 40 hits. Do not miss Barry Manilow at the Tampa Bay Times Forum on Friday, January 31st. Tickets on sale now at all Ticketmaster outlets or online at Ticketmaster.com. All of the hits, one night only. Manilow, live at the Tampa Bay Times Forum.
On your drive home Monday evening, listen to Your PC Hero, a brand new time, Monday evening from 5 until 6.
Alan Barrebe.
Check out our website, yourpchero.com.
And the Shogun.
Alan.
Yes, sir.
I've decided that the world is not big enough for me anymore. I am changing my name to Shogun of Universal World Peace.
Your PC Hero, new time, 5 to 6, Monday evening drive time, here on Tantalk.
Imus in the morning.
Please welcome out to the Imus in the Morning program, former Beatle Ringo Starr. Morning, Ringo.
Well, sit on me Facebook and tell me that you love me. I haven't seen a stock fail like that since the Maharishi tried to open a chain of hamburger restaurants in Calcutta. I knew those shares were going to go down quicker than Joseph Abood on Betty Davis night at the Ramrod, but I haven't been this happy since Michael Jackson stole the rights to Yesterday. Should have been a rubber glove, not sequins, the way Jacko gave Paulie a prostate massage on that one. But in the long run, it ultimately doesn't make that much difference, even if Facebook drops so low it's not even worth wiping your bum with it. Zuckerberg will still have enough money left in his couch cushions to finance a space program. Paul will still own the publishing to Wipeout by the Safaris and get a check every time somebody flushes a toilet. But there's still a chance for growth, and you can increase your chances for growth with Extigen Male Enhancement Tablets. Give your woman a long and winding road to sexual satisfaction.
You're selling male enhancement products?
Catch Imus in the Morning right here.
You're listening to the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We are back on Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. Thank you so very much for being with us. We are joined by Adam Swart. Adam Swart has come up with a what I think is a very innovative idea. He has an organization called Crowds on Demand, and I think that term speaks for itself in terms of what he offers. But Adam, welcome to Freedom Works. Tell us what you are offering with Crowds on Demand.
Well, first of all, thanks so much for giving me the opportunity to come on the show. Hope you're all having a good morning. Basically, we offer the opportunity to rent manpower for whatever it is that you need, whether it's a protest against the company that's ripping you off, a protest for a politician you like or against the politician you don't like, whether it's experiencing a celebrity experience by being surrounded by paparazzi, photographers, security guards, fans. We give people the opportunity to sort of expand their outreach, expand, you know, and really get the manpower that they need for whether it's for a publicity stunt, politics, personal use, or anything else.
So if I wanted to impress my girlfriend or my wife or whoever, and I'm taking a trip by plane with her, and I'm landing in Omaha, Nebraska with her. Can you organize a group of people to be there with signs saying, welcome, Paul?
Absolutely. That'd be a pretty typical service offering for us. We'd have signs saying welcome. We'd have paparazzi photographers saying, look, it's Paul Molloy coming into town. What are you here for? How long are you here for? You know, tell us about your latest controversy. You know, so exactly, we sort of have a lot of hype raising for
yes.
him, more or less.
Now, do you get a lot of people that actually hire you for that purpose, for sort of an ego-stroking reason?
I mean, it's really a mix of clientele, which is it's one reason why I really like the business. I mean, some of it is people wanting to sort of have that celebrity experience. Oftentimes, it's someone who is actually a personality and who wants to sort of build hype for that. Whether it's an actor, singer, fashion designer, we've worked with a lot of people who are actually somewhat well-known but want to sort of increase their name strategically, increase that proliferation. So they'll hire a crowd to sort of make them seem a bit bigger. So that's definitely one of our the groups we have. But we do a lot of political-based protests, for example. People who are very mad at a company that they believe has ripped them off. People who are very passionate about a cause. Who want a protest for it. I mean, think about the value, Paul, of being able to threaten if someone's ripping you off. Look, I'm going to have protesters out here next week protesting you all week. That's a huge threat, and it keeps businesses and it keeps folks accountable.
Well, that's a very interesting point. And I do know that demonstrators have been hired to protest, oh, for instance, maybe at some fast food restaurant because of low wages, or a Walmart type of a thing. And some of them have been interviewed and said, yes, you know, we were hired by unions to come over, and they handed us a sign and this, that, and the other thing. So, Adam, have you ever had, without giving, you know, anything away on it, have you ever delivered to a protest like that, you know, protesting maybe a business or something? Have you ever had the opportunity to provide people for that?
We've provided a protest for a lot of different occasions, including ones that haven't covered a lot in the media. I obviously couldn't tell you which ones. I will say that our protesters are a lot more professional than a lot of the ones that I've seen at some of these demonstrations, because we've only had one incident in our 1.5 years of business where a protest has been like uncovered as being paid. Most of our protests look very genuine. Our protesters have, you know, gone on the media looking very genuine. Our protesters have seemed genuine to basically everyone involved. So we don't have that whole issue that's embarrassing like some people have, where they've just sort of admitted that they're hired guns, because our guys are trained. Most of them have worked with me for quite a while, so they really know the lay of the land, which is why we are regularly hired by some pretty top-notch groups.
We're talking with Adam Swart. He is the CEO of Crowds on Demand. How did you come up with this concept, Adam?
Well, Paul, basically, a lot of people don't even believe this story, but I was on a plane, getting off a plane, rather, in Estonia about a year and a half ago, and I saw someone who was sitting across the aisle from me who seemed to be trying to get a lot of attention at the airport. He got an SUV escort. There were security guards. There were people sort of looking at it at him like who like this is some big deal, and I had no idea who he was. So I got to thinking, anyone can really increase their stature just by having the trappings of fame. And I sort of took that to the next level by thinking of a lot of other ways where sort of that increased manpower, that increased the having actors like people there, can really change the narrative. Not just about you, but it could change the narrative about your cause. It could change the narrative about your company. Whatever it is, these small sort of subtle things can really change the narrative about any situation. So that's sort of how I got to thinking of Crowds on Demand.
So If I'm, do you specialize in certain metro areas? What if I'm out in Hoboken, New Jersey, or, you know, someplace that's perhaps not a mainstream city like L.A. or New York or Chicago or something like that? Do you send people there?
Sure. And, yeah, we operate all over the country. We have teams and people on call basically in every metro area in the country. And we've, even for special events, we've actually sent people out to more rural parts of the country. I've been in rural Illinois, rural Colorado for different sort of events. So we've definitely sent people out to more rural areas of the country. I mean, primarily our events are in L.A., New York, D.C., Miami, et cetera. But we do events all over the country all the time, Raleigh, Dallas, Bay Area, wherever it is that something comes up, we're always available, and we have pretty good teams everywhere. So that's no problem. New Jersey, I mean, in terms of Hoboken, New Jersey, that would just be our New York team. So
right.
A lot of times we'll just use the team that we have in a nearby city, and we'll sort of bust them out or drive them out there for the event. And we've definitely done work in New Jersey, as you can imagine.
Okay, so let me get to some nuts and bolts here. I want to find out how much I'd have to pay. Let's say that I'm going to fly into Detroit and from Tampa, and I want a crowd out there to greet me at some point at the gate when I come in, where people can see them greeting me. And so I come to you and I say, Adam, I want to set this up. I mean, what questions do you ask me? Like, what will you need to know? Will you ask me how many? Do I determine how many demonstrators or people or fans should be there, or do you offer me different packages, or may I ask how that works?
Sure. I mean, we always work with people to customize the option. I mean, one way that we do it is we'll offer you four different sort of package ideas from small to large. The smallest typically in the high hundreds, and then the largest going into the high thousands and tens of thousands, depending on what you're looking for.
Hundreds of dollars? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, it starts from the hundreds of dollars. Yeah.
Dollars. Okay, you're talking money, not people.
Yeah.
I thought maybe you start out with minimum 100 people is your smallest pay.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Oh, no. We do a lot of events with 5-10 people.
Okay, here's the deal. I want you to provide me with 25 people at the Detroit airport. I'm going to be flying in on February the 22nd. And I want 25 people at the airport to be there to root me on when I come off the plane at the gate. So how much are you going to charge me, or how does this work?
Sure. So if it's just a simple matter of 25 people, we could give you a quote for that. Typically, we would ask whether you have special requests, like do you want photographers? Do you want a guy taking video? Are there any other sort of special requests that you'd have? Because that could increase the price of the service. If it was just literally 25 people in that situation that you wanted for, you know, an hour or two, that'd probably be running just under a couple $1,000.
I see. Now, what if I wanted only attractive young women to be greeting me? Like I was a rock star. I mean, do you charge? Can you give me strictly women? I'm being a little facetious here, but I mean, could I narrow it down to the kinds of, you know, age or gender?
People often try to do that. For the most part, we try to work within people's constraints to some degree, of course. We're always trying to make sure that people are happy with our services, of course.
Okay.
And the one thing that I'd say is the other way that we sometimes will book events is somebody will be like, look, I've got $1,500 for an event. What's the best you can do for me for that amount?
Got it.
And then we'll be like, okay, well, look.
You'll work it out with
get
them.
You a few. We'll work it out with
right.
them. I mean, we really like to. I mean, I really enjoy working with lots of different clients.
Sure.
So you know, we're pretty able to satisfy different budgets, but
yes,
you know,
gotcha. I'm sorry, Adam, we're running out of time. I'm gonna ask you just to tell people how they can contact you.
Sure. So check us out at www.crowdsondemand.com. Send us an email from the site, request at crowdsondemand.com, or give us a call, 310-307-4995.
Thanks, Adam, very much, and best of luck to you.
All right. Thanks for having me on the show.
All righty. Well, my friends, Adam Swart, Crowds on Demand. Very interesting. Very interesting indeed. We got to get to our top 10 list. I promised it. And let's get to it as quickly as we can. These are the most dangerous airports in the world. And if I could find the sheet, I will start them off right away here. I know I've got it here somewhere. And
so is he available for radio personalities in decline?
Yes, that's why I was asking those questions.
Well, I was going to write down the website for myself.
And now I cannot find my top 10 list of my most dangerous airports in the world after promising. Oh, yeah.
Which is dangerous in itself.
Well, it's dangerous that you have me in front of a microphone, but I do have it. So hang on just a minute.
Okay.
How much time do I have left to give it?
Oh, like 30 seconds.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was going to start playing our nifty new theme music.
Bear with me, my friend, because I do want to get to it.
Tune in tomorrow. To see if Paul has found his list.
No, I wanted to be honestly give them this here. We may go over just a little
honestly,
bit.
We got like 15 seconds.
15 seconds. Okay. Here they are, and I'm just going to go right down the list.
Okay, you have 10 seconds.
10, Comdo Bombna Airport. 9, Wancho Roskin Airport. 8, Gustav Airport. 7, Antarctica. And number 1.